When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to another Arsblog Arscast, right here on arsblog.oleole.com. Hope we find you well. It's been rather a slow week, has it not? A Danielson of a week, you might say. After the United game, you would wish for the next game to come as quickly as possible, so you could eradicate the pain and the hurt and the despair and depression of that United game. Get straight back into the saddle. And all kinds of other cliches that say the same thing. Can't think of any of them now off the top of my head, but you know what I'm talking about. As it is, we've had to sit around all week with little or no news, and all we've had to do is moan and groan and grumble and gripe, and I think that's fine. I got no real problem with that. But I would have liked a game in midweek to help us get over things a little quicker. Chelsea, of course, coming up on Sunday, and we'll have plenty to say about that game coming up, and more to say about the United game in a few moments' time as well. With me on the show today will be Good Player from goodplayer.com. We'll be talking United and Chelsea and all the bits and pieces regarding that. As well as that, Andre Arshavin is here. The man in the bar is back. He's been in the recording studio. He certainly has, laying down some tracks for his new concept album. I'm not allowed to tell you what the concept is. Let's just say it's topical, and all should become clear when we play you a few clips a little bit later on in the show. So, Arsenal versus Manchester United, at home. They've never beaten us at the Grove in the league. That all changed on Sunday. And it wasn't much fun at all, I have to say. The lineup, some of the performances, the general performance, the watching them at our stadium want it more than we did, the us allowing them to want it more than we did without saying, no, you don't want it more than we do, we want it more, and at least trying. It was all terrible. First goal, I mean, Nani. Seriously, for a start, his name is Nani. Nani. It's embarrassing to be done like a kipper time and time again by a player called Nani. So Gael Clichy had a torrid time, a rotten afternoon, by a guy who previously was like, I don't know, Charles Nzogbia on crack, and he made Clichy look rather foolish indeed. So that was depressing. Nani. That's a goat's name, not a footballer. He brought about the first goal because of his stupid trick, and then Danielson, he made like an archer or something. He knelt down. I don't know what he was trying to do. And then Almunia, well, what can you say about Manuel Almunia at this stage? It's depressing to me now that Almunia is still in goal, because when you think about it, Jens Lehmann was very solid for us. Yes, he made the odd mistake, but then all keepers make the odd mistake. Almunia played very well for two seasons, but still made the odd mistake. And Petr Cech and Shea Given and Reina and all these guys, they all make the odd mistake. It's part of being a goalkeeper. Same way every other position on the field, they make mistakes. Goalkeeper, it's a bit more high profile, but they all do it. Nobody's flawless. But Lehmann made two mistakes at the start of the season, a couple of seasons ago. And after those two mistakes, was on the bench the rest of the season. The manager was ruthless, absolutely ruthless. Almunia has been ham-fisting his way through the season and is undroppable. And it's depressing. To me now, it's depressing. I don't want to be hard on the guy. I get, you know, he seems like an awfully nice guy. But he's playing like a cunt. There's no two ways about it. And I'll put it into perspective for you. This is how you know how bad he really is. When I'm playing FIFA on the PlayStation, I pick Fabianski, even though Almunia is 6 better than Fabianski. 6? That's a lot. In video game terms, when you're playing online against some little wanker who's always Barcelona, always Barcelona, aren't they? They're always Barcelona. It's fucking annoying. But anyway, you're playing online and you're thinking, well, should I pick my strongest team? Maybe I'll pick... I can't even pick him in FIFA. And he's 6 better than Fabianski. And that's the true measure to me of why Almunia needs to be dropped. And dropped straight away. Almunia doesn't convince everyone, but come on. He's got to be given a go at this stage. Second goal... Second goal was thoroughly, thoroughly depressing because it summed up Rooney's desire and work rate and effort, and it summed up our complete switching offness. Nobody had a clue he was coming. Not one player. Danielson had a little look over his shoulder and went, oh, fuck. Bollocks. Yeah, just turn around. Be aware of where their players are. I mean, he started about 20 yards into his own half and got there before any of our players. Depressing. And the third goal. Well, I mean, oh, the more replays you watch of that goal, the worse it gets. Danielson lost the ball. It was a fairly routine ball, a high ball to take down, but it got away from him. They put it forward to Park. We ambled back. Clichy had no clue what to be doing. Should he go to the player or stay with the man who was running? Go to the player. You have to. You don't have any choice. When it's 2-on-1, you've got to go to the guy with the ball. At least try and make it difficult for him. And don't say, well, oh, look at this. Here you go. There you go. And look, actually, if you hadn't noticed, our goalkeeper is a mentaler. And you could just, like, roll it in there at the near post. He's mental. Go ahead. Look, score. Told you. And then you have Danielson being overtaken by the ref on the way back. Overtaken by the ref, who's what? 45, whatever he is? Now, I know he was probably never going to get there, but at least goddamn try if you're the one that's lost the ball. Try. So it was all a bit depressing. We got a goal back through Vermaelen, who was one of the few players on the pitch who looked like he actually gave a shit. And the game passed too many of us by. And the danger is, of course, if we play like that against Chelsea at their place, we're going to get turned over good and proper. Now, I expect a reaction. I'm sure the manager will be telling his players this week in training that he wants 100, 1,000, 1,000,000 times more from them on Sunday when we go to Chelsea, and I think we'll probably get it. There'll be no slacking, no goofing off, no looking around going, oh, fuck, he scored. None of that. But then you have to ask the question, why were we like that on Sunday? Why did some players think it was okay to perform the way they did? Because you can forgive a player who's not in good form. And Clichy is an example of this. He's not in good form. He's playing very, very poorly. And we can argue at a later date as to whether that's just he's going through a terrible run of form or whether he's just maybe not as good as we thought he was. But the one thing you'd say about him is that at least he tries. He doesn't stop running. He'll chase back. He'll try and make a tackle. But some players, even that seemed too much for them. And that's depressing. And when you're at the top of the table, playing against one of your rivals for the title, the very last thing that you should be accused of is lack of effort and lack of desire and lack of will to win a game, which was so important. The 3 points would have been absolutely crucial. Now, it's not all over yet. A lot depends on the game on Sunday and again the game on Wednesday. And I'm sure, like I say, we'll get a reaction from the players on Sunday when we go out at Stamford Bridge. For me, though, the question mark is why we played like that on Sunday. Anyway, to talk a little bit more about the Manchester United game and the Chelsea game coming up this weekend, in very general terms, is a good player from goodplayer.com. Hello there.
Hello there.
Manchester United last Sunday, a big test for this Arsenal team and one that they didn't pass. The result, I suppose, always disappointed when you lose against United, the rivalry down the years, and of course a rival for the title this year. But the the level of the performance, I think, is probably what concerned people more than anything. Arsenal just didn't turn up on the day, really.
I think that's true. I think people were staggered by some of the defending we saw. I was trying to think when I'd last seen defending that poor from an Arsenal side, and I can't really think of when I have in 20 years of watching the team. And I suppose the amazing thing about this side is that you can go from great highs one week to these terrible lows the next week. And if you ask people what two games they remember of this season, they'd probably say Chelsea at home and United at home. And actually, they're not really representative of the season if you actually look at it. And the rest of the time, we've actually done pretty well. But it's hard to take your eyes off them, if you like, when you see us so totally outclassed. And I think we were.
How do we explain the statistic that the man from East Lower put on his blog? The last eight games against United and Chelsea, played eight, drawn one, lost seven, only scored five goals, conceded 18. Is it an accurate measure of the respective qualities of both of the sides? Are we that much worse than they are?
No, because I think if you look back to last season, last autumn, we beat each of them, Man U at home and Chelsea away. Yeah, you can get these little runs. I think the way we play, particularly this season, is we found quite a high wire, which means you can get fantastic comebacks like the one against Bolton. You can get us knocking six past teams, as we've seen. But equally, you leave yourself exposed. I mean, you only need to look at how many goals Gallas and Vermaelen have gotten, which is fantastic. But you see, they've obviously been spending a fair amount of time up front, which I think is good because we've needed that. But I think we play on quite a high wire, and so if things go our way, that's brilliant. If things don't go our way, we always seem to risk conceding that second and third goal and kind of putting it out of our reach, if you like. So, it's not a great statistic, is it?
Similarities, I have to say, between the game against Everton when we were 2, I think it was 1-1, wasn't it? And we're going forward looking for a goal to try and win the game, and the Pienaar goal, simple ball over the top, and all of a sudden their guy is basically clean through on goal. It doesn't seem like we're learning the lessons from the defensive mistakes that we're making, though.
No, we don't seem to be, and that's concerning because there were some really simple mistakes in there. If nothing else, this whole thing of two men going towards one player and leaving another player completely free, I think, Nasri's done it twice, I think he's done that. And I know he's only trying to help, and he is an attacker, but he's kind of left his man, and so his man's been free to kind of run the length of the field, if you like, and he's gone across to a guy who's already been marked. And it is fairly simple stuff. I mean, that third goal on Sunday was incredible, and I used to wonder as a kid why, when I didn't really understand angles and how football goals worked, why people didn't just do what Park Ji-sung did. And then I realised when I was about 9 that it's because of angles and you kind of block off the near, you stop the guy from just doing that. It was like watching some kind of 1980s computer game. It was just embarrassing. But, I don't know what to say.
Defensively, we're struggling, let's say, at left-back, and unfortunately the manager doesn't really have an option there in terms of who he can bring in, because Traore was as poor, if not worse, than Clichy, but it's clearly a weak spot that teams are targeting when they play us. And the goalkeeping situation as well, how much longer can he keep playing Manuel Almunia?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not one. I don't like to go into all the amateur psychology that some people do because we don't really know. But I have been to all home games recently, and I went to the Stoke game away. And Dallas and Almunia, from what I see, they don't exactly communicate brilliantly. And I just don't see how long it can carry on. But equally, you don't know what's he going to do about it. I mean, Fabianski kind of doesn't inspire either. I mean, Mignone for me, maybe in 5 years or something, but not for quite a while. So we're really stuck on that, I think, because I don't see how we can... I just can't see us winning something with Almunia as the goalkeeper, because he doesn't make those great saves that you need. He doesn't save you when you need to be saved, and he does screw things up when you really don't need to be screwed up, if we're honest. So I just don't... It's a mess on that front, the goalkeeping... I think.
Are you of the opinion, I mean, I know Fabianski doesn't really convince too many people, but my opinion on this is that he can't possibly be worse than Almunia, and we might as well give him a run of games to see what he can do.
No, I think we should give him a run of games. I suspect that maybe the next two games is not the time. Arsenal might try and look after the Liverpool game. This is just pure speculation. We'll have 10 days rest before the Sunderland game, before a run of games which are slightly less arduous than the current lot, I suppose, on paper. And so maybe that's when he'd make the change. Maybe he's thinking, you know, for the next couple of games, we'll just stick with Almunia and hopefully just pray for the best, I guess.
It's a sad time if the manager is resorting to praying to solve our problems. Let's hope that he's got something a little more insightful or intelligent than that. Transfer window closed on Monday, the day after the Manchester United game. Of course, had we beaten United, there wouldn't have been the same clamour for people looking for signings. He was never going to buy anyone on Monday if he hadn't bought anybody by then anyway. But are you surprised that January came and went with a net loss of players and the only arrival that of a 34, 35-year-old centre-half?
Yeah, I mean, I think on the net loss of players, to be fair to Wenger, it's not like Wilshere or indeed Carlos Vela have been getting loads of starts in the Arsenal starting 11. So I think I can understand that one in a way. But I think, to be fair, on the centre-back thing, Sendros wasn't really in consideration. From August till February, so there was actually till January, sorry. So he wasn't really a central defender because he just wasn't considered for the team for whatever reason, right or wrong. So I think he has, on the central defence, he has bolstered things. But you know, we heard all the rumours in August about him looking at Robert Green on transfer deadline day. Seems astonishing we couldn't have found some goalkeeper somewhere in the world that might have been a better option to what we've got at the moment. And he did say he wanted a striker and he didn't get one, which is quite uncommon for him actually, because normally if Arsene Wenger wants a striker, he normally buys two. But that was a surprise. I think with the striker thing, what's when you've got two up front, you can kind of have two strikers playing together. You can have a striker and a forward playing together, and it's a lot more flexible than when you've actually got one up front, even though you've only got one place to fill. Mm. It's a lot more specialist, if you like. And I suppose I didn't really think about that so much. And without Van Persie and with Eduardo struggling, you really go in the event when he's only just coming back. And Arshavin could play, I think, very well in a two up front, maybe, but on his own up front, I don't think it's his speciality.
Do you think he's waiting for Shamak in the summer? Is he looking for the cheap bargain signing of a guy that he really wants ahead of spending some money in January?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the other thing I think you have to realise with Wenger's signings is that, generally speaking, over the last 3 years, when they have happened, they've actually been quite good. If you look at Arshavin, Vermaelen have been the recent ones. If you go back a bit further, I know not everyone's delighted with Sané Nasri's play at the moment, but I don't think he's a bad player. Eduardo, Sanya, Dallas, the ones since we've come to the Emirates have been very good. They've just been few and far between. And it's as though he's become a perfectionist in his kind of latter years. And he's not ready to take some of the punts he did a while ago, where he famously bought those five players in the summer of 2000. I think Inamoto, Wright, Sol Campbell, Francis Jeffers, and Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. And I think out of those, only Sol Campbell had any kind of impact at the club. And I think he's almost, in his perfectionist ideals, he'd never expose himself to that kind of thing again.
Not prepared to gamble at this point.
No.
All right, well, let's look ahead to Sunday. Chelsea is probably not the place you want to go after getting beaten by Manchester United. Nevertheless, we won there last season. Hull showed in midweek that they're not the unstoppable machine that we all fear they are, given the level of optimism that we're going into the game with. I suppose that the main thing, of course, is to look for a reaction from the players in terms of the work rate and the effort and the performance they put in.
I think that's totally true. I think on Hull it's interesting because I think Hull also reminds us that it's not an easy league. And if you saw parts of that game, as I did, Hull were really impressive. And people say that Chelsea and Man U haven't been as good this season. And that's the only reason why we're in touch. But I don't think that's true. I think there's the rest have caught up in some ways and are putting in huge amounts of effort. And I think our boys actually deserve some respect for the way they've coped against the rest of the teams, if you like. If you look at only the West Ham away result, I'd say was a really disappointing one, and maybe Sunderland, but they were going through a great run of form at the time. And we've coped really well with the lesser lights, if you like, actually better than Man U and Chelsea have statistically. So I think that's worth noting. I think that's worth acknowledging for the team. How do we raise ourselves for this Sunday? Well, I think effort is a huge thing. I think anyone we kind of haven't really talked about Danielson yet, but you don't want to pick on a young player, but it was painful on Sunday. And, you know, he's presumably paid a lot of money. And I think he could have run a bit harder a couple of times. If we're honest with ourselves, how do we pick ourselves up? Well, I think if we can vary things, it'd be good. I'm no great fan of the team that played on Sunday. I think it's very same-ish. Rzycki and Nasri never look more kind of, their flaws are never as obviously exposed as when they play opposite each other, if you like. Yeah. If you play one of them, it's, and then you play Osterin on the other wing, it's quite a nice little balance. But if you play both of them, it looks very one-paced and very same-ish. And I think, you know, if we can bring in Bentner and ideally Diaby, we do actually then have a bit of variety in our team. And that just mixes up, causes Chelsea a couple of different problems. You could even play a Boué, who'd give us a bit more stability and a bit more pace, maybe. So I think if we can give ourselves a bit more variety, that could help. But really, effort is a huge thing, and we didn't have it all the time on last Sunday.
Is it win or bust? Certainly, it's not lose or bust. If we get beaten at Stamford Bridge, that's presumably it for our title chances.
No, I disagree. I'm in the minority of about 0.3% who actually think that you need to. Obviously, a gap of 9 points is a huge gap.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
But you do, at this stage of the season, need to look at who you have to play and who Chelsea have to play.
Sure.
And the vast majority of our games would be against teams who, thus far, we've done reasonably well against. You know, we'd have only Tottenham and Man City are the glaringly kind of ones that ring sirens out at you. Whereas Chelsea would have a lot more tough games to play. What I would say is if the gap is anything more than 9 points after the Liverpool game, which is the night that Chelsea play Everton, then I think it's definitely over if it's any more than 9 points. I think 9 points would make it very difficult. I actually think Chelsea want to be winning this weekend against us because we do have easier games. I know this might sound hopelessly, you know, optimistic on my part and laughable to some of the listeners, but I think Chelsea actually want to be beating us because I think if we can go 6 points, if we're 6 points behind after the Liverpool game, after the Chelsea game, sorry, that I don't think is a bad place to be at all. And they go to Everton on Wednesday night. You know, so actually, certainly don't think it's win or bust. And I'm not entirely convinced it's draw or bust.
Well, that's some optimism. Maybe that's what we need a bit at this moment. Fingers crossed we get the response that we're all looking for from the players and an end to that rather nasty run of results against United and Chelsea. Good player. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you indeed to Good Player from goodplayer.com. Do check out his blog, and apologies for some of the sound quality on that. A bit echoey at my end and some crashing and banging at the other end, which I'm speculating here. I'm only guessing, but I imagine it's Good Player helping out at his local soup kitchen because he's a good guy and likes to do things to better his community, wherever that community might be. So I think we can all doff our cap to Good Player there. Now, you know, we do welcome your contributions here on the Arscast from time to time. There is the dedicated Arscast hotline, which I must put the number up somewhere so people can actually make contributions, but those in the know have got it programmed into their phones already, and did receive some answering machine messages this week. All seem to be of the same theme, kinda. Yeah, here they are.
Mrs. Bridges going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Bridges going down on John Terry. Mrs. Cole is going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Cole is going down on John Terry. Mrs. Drogba's going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Drogba's going down on John Terry. Mrs. Ballack's going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Ballack's going down on John Terry. Mrs. Lampard's going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Lampard's going down on John Terry. Mrs. Essien's going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Essien's going down on John Terry. Mrs. Deco's going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Deco's going down on John Terry. Mrs. Check is going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Check is going down on John Terry. Mrs. Bridges going down, going down, going down. Mrs. Bridges going down on John Terry.
And, yeah, funnily enough, Arsenal are playing Chelsea this weekend. Were anyone stuck for something to sing if they were going to the game? Perhaps they might take those messages on board? As Chelsea are led out on the pitch by John Terry. What a guy. What a captain. I've been captain of a few football teams in my life. I never knew it came with such privileges. But I mean, it must be comforting to be a player under the stewardship of John Terry, knowing that in times of crisis, he's right there behind you. Or to put it another way, right behind your wife, or on top of your wife, underneath your wife, and all kinds of other things. Players will certainly go the extra mile for a guy that shows such dedication and commitment to the team ethic. It's to be applauded, really, isn't it? Anyway, apropos of nothing, the man in the bar got in touch. Might remember he used to do all the player histories until we kind of ran out of players. Sort of done them all. And then he got famous. Went to a swanky new bar, and I don't like it. It's too neon lit and too much kind of dancey music for me, and, you know, smoke machines and all that stuff. But yeah, he was in touch. He's been recording a new album. And he asked me if I would be so kind as to give you people a sneak listen. And well, after everything he did, I thought I couldn't turn him down. So here it is.
Arseblog Records is proud to announce the brand new album from The Man in the Bar. Following up on the critically acclaimed Songs About Arsenal Players, using songs that have already been written by someone else and just changing the words around a bit, is out now. Entitled John Terry's Lonely Hearts Club Band, it features the classic vocal stylings of The Man in the Bar on such favourites as How Soon Is Now.
I am the sun and the air of a penis that is criminally vulgar. I am the son and heir of football in particular. You
For clues with an awesome rendition of Robert Palmer's Johnny and Mary.
Johnny's always running around trying to shag players' wives. He needs all the bears to confirm that he ain't lonely. Mary counts the walls, says she's got chlamydia. Johnny thinks the girls are his right because he plays Chelsea. Mary says he comes too quickly, just like a schoolboy. But he plows her quim, even when the chance was slim.
Feel the tug on those heartstrings with a moving version of Simon and Garfunkel's classic, Bridge Over Troubled Water.
He's a city. Can't stop a goal. When you are missing Wayne, I will get my home off your missus, in case you had noticed, like, I'm by her side. When you are gone, but now they just I'm a filthy clown 'cause of Wayne Bridges' wife's abortion. I'm a filthy clown.
You needn't worry, Ledley. Your missus is fine.
This album is only available through Arseblog. To order, send your credit card details, bank account number, social security number, and your original passport to 7 Dublin. We'll do the rest.
I saw her dancing down the street with her pale blue eyes. And now her boyfriend is away. He doesn't know the real surprise. Here she comes again, wiping off my jism from her eye. Ooh, a pearl necklace. I lied. He used to like her sexy face. She was my best friend's girl. She was my best friend's girl. And now she's mine.
And mine, me too.
And also mine.
Please allow 28 days for delivery.
I think it's fair to say that that is going to be a multi Grammy award winning piece of vinyl, because it's coming out on vinyl to stop piracy, you see. The minute you put it up on iTunes, one guy downloads it, it's on rapid share within minutes, and nobody makes any money out of it. So it's on vinyl or cassette. I feel safe enough releasing it on cassette because nobody has the double cassette decks anymore. They'd have to get two separate cassette decks and put them together with a five-pin DIN lead. Do you remember that? Recording from tape to tape. Whether it was an album that had been recorded off vinyl onto a tape or a ZX Spectrum game. Everything had an underlying shh noise. But don't worry, I will use the top-quality TDK metallic cassettes. Metallic tape, remember those? It wasn't just normal tape, it was metallic. Look like normal tape to me. But then what do I know? Anyway, next year when the man in the bar is at the Grammys with Beyonce and Kanye West and Pink and Nick Kershaw and all these people, I'm sure he'll forget about us. Here at Arseblog, we'll be as unimportant as people who set up online petitions. Which are, I don't know, it's like possibly the worst thing you can do online. I know morally there are worse things you can do. You know, but I mean, online petitions. I mean, the basic thing is that most of them have hardly any signatures. And the simple fact is that if you had any commitment to the cause that you were petitioning for, you could easily make hundreds of thousands of them yourself. Of course, it would take a bit of time, setting up email addresses and confirming and all that. But if you were really committed to what it was you were petitioning, then you would do it, wouldn't you? So that's why they're a complete waste of time. Get out there and get a real petition or a life, perhaps. One of those things. Not easy to come by, but if you try, you just might find you get what you need. Andrei Arshavin.
Hello, I am Andrei Arshavin, and this week we play Manchester United, and it's not so good. In first half, I have one, maybe two, five chance to make goal, but don't make goal. And then they scored two goal, and in second half, we cannot defend, and they get three goal. And after game, I am talking with Danielson, who is very slow. And I say to him, hey, you are spastic. You cannot run after player. And he said to me, oh, it's very funny that you can say to other player about running after other player. And I say, oh, you are very funny. And then I reach up and punch him as hard as possible. Now he is out of game on Sunday with a very badly bruised shin. Manager is not happy, but for me it's okay.
So moving on to team news for Sunday, and Eduardo is out. Not much of a surprise that, I have to say. It is Eduardo. After all, he is an Arsenal player who we could use on the pitch, but he hasn't recovered from his hamstring problem. Carlos Vela is also out. He's got a knee or an ankle or a thigh or groin or calf or something. So he's not around. So attacking options from the bench are slightly limited. Theo Walcott is fit. Bentner's fit in the squad. Diaby is a maybe. He still hasn't joined in proper training, Arsene Wenger says. This is according to his interview on Arsenal.com, but that could have been done on Wednesday even. So hopefully Diaby will make it, because I think we could probably do with him. Him and Bentner would give the team a little bit of physicality, a bit of size, and a little bit of allow us to be a little bit different. It's all a bit samey when everyone in the team is, you know, 5'6" to 5'9". Could do with a bit more tallness. Do not underestimate the power of tallness. The game itself, what can you say? We've got to have a reaction from the Manchester United game. My head tells me if we lose this game, that's it for the title chances. Regardless of the run-in that we have, which is a little bit easier than all the others, and there is a lot to be said for getting the results against those other teams. We've heard all week about how United had terrible record against the other big four teams and still won the league last year. I just think it's too much of a gap if we lose against Chelsea. A draw, I think we could have some hope that Chelsea are going to drop points along the way, given the games that they have and the fixtures they have. A draw wouldn't be the worst result in the world. And on the back of the United game, I'd probably take a draw. Of course, I'd much prefer a win. A late win would be awesome. I mean, I prefer 4-0 or 5-0, but something like Cesc coming forward from midfield, going past one player, going past another, and taking a shot, which is going clearly wide. almost out for a throw-in. It's going that wide. And it hits off the semi-erect cock of John Terry. Because let's face it, it probably deserves a bit of physical punishment. Now, I don't want to get into a whole thing about John Terry's cock here. I don't want to evoke any images in your head that are indelible, that will stay there forever. That's not my intention here. But it would be poetic justice, I think, if Terry was strutting about the pitch, having a little think about which player's wife he was going to get it on with, little semi-chubby, and Cesc's shot goes boom, and in it goes in the 94th minute to win the game for Arsenal. I would like that very, very much indeed. But most of all, I want our players to turn up and to put in a performance worthy of the shirt and show that they really do want to fight for this title. Quite what team he's going to pick and how he can rotate things, I don't quite know. And let's not forget that before the next time we talk, there's the small matter of Liverpool on Wednesday. So we want to be going into that game a little bit refreshed in terms of our belief, in terms of our momentum. But it is a huge, huge game on Sunday. We've got to get something out of it at least. Come away with nothing from Stamford Bridge. And for me, unfortunately, I think that's our title hopes over. A draw? Yeah, we can still do it. A win? We're right back in it. For how long? I don't know, but a win would really set this team back on track. So fingers crossed, we'll hope for all that. One final thing, just in light of a couple of emails, some people were asking why it is that the theme music of the Arscast ends, and it might end at 36 minutes, but on their thing it still goes for 37 or 37 and a half minutes, etc., etc. There's a little thing after the theme tune ends. That's, I'm sure most of you are aware of that, but for those of you that aren't, just let it keep playing. So there you go. All right then, have yourselves a very good weekend. Keep my fingers crossed for glorious victory on Sunday. Talk to you all next week on the blog, of course, and on next week's Arscast. Until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
You know, Michael, the police are behind us. Perhaps we should pull over. They do seem rather insistent, Michael. Michael, perhaps we should pull over and see what they want. I'm not sure we can outrun them, Michael. Michael, are you sure you know what you're doing, Michael?
You stupid car! My name isn't Michael, it's Jay Emmanuel Thomas! Now, let's give these pigs a race! Yeah, come on!
Now, for fuck's sake, you stupid little cunt.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.